what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bull to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
We're live.
Well, on Orpik, Stocks and Jocks, I'm talking about Jimmy Lawler on the board. Matt Byrne will be here in a little bit. S&P futures up 9, NASDAQ futures up 17, Dow futures up 111. We seem to be liking, we got the CPI coming out this week, so that's kind of a spot we got to be worried about. Of course, we're going to fire the rest of the Bureau of Labor Statistics if they come out with a bad number. But that's the world we live in, and everybody seems to be happy with it, or I guess some people do. So that's where that all is. Some of the interesting headlines today is, Mr. Flanagan gets on, I'll talk about this. NVIDIA and AMD to pay 15% of China chip sales revenues to the U.S. government. Jimmy, what are we turning into? What am I missing here?
Deals, and more deals.
Is this to the government, or is this NVIDIA will jump 20% after a report of China export license agreement? I find this very troubling. I know I'm probably the only one because everybody likes NVIDIA stock, but. This is bizarre world. I don't know what we're turning into, but it's kind of not us, I don't think. But actually, NVIDIA's down a buck, so somebody's predicting it's up 20%. We had a couple interesting things last week. Cubs can't win. Brewers can't lose. We got that going on. But we had the Bears. We had first lady umpire this weekend in major leagues. And Jimmy, I'm going to say my hat is off to her.
Yes, absolutely.
Give yourself a little volume to me, will you? Because I can barely hear you.
Okay, is
there
that
you
better?
Better.
Okay.
And just as a word of explanation, I'm not. This is just what I heard several years ago. If anybody knows one of the major league umpires now, actually, he was a guy supposedly, Jimmy, who last year called the only perfect game behind the plate. A guy named. His last name's Tom Payne. Is it not Mike? Not Mike is his uncle, is the guy he's played basketball with. Remember, his last name is Tom Payne. And I ran to him at a party on the south side a few years ago. And the thing about the lady umpire, I think some of it has to do with, I use the term the process and how you get to be an umpire. Those guys, it may have changed, but they would go to umpire school down in Niggers. There are two of them, there's one in Florida. I'm not so sure where the other one is, but there's a couple of major league umpire schools, essentially. And you go to the school, and I said, well, me being the inquisitive knucklehead that I am, I said, people that go there that have never umped a game versus people that have umped softball and little league and all kinds of stuff. I said, who does better? And he goes, it's interesting. About half of each, it's almost the exact same percentage, that end up graduating. I'm not so sure what I would have guessed there. What would you have guessed?
I really don't know. I would say half would be a pretty good guess.
But I mean, you would think that people. Like he said some people learn the wrong way and just would never couldn't change.
Or they come in. They already have umpiring experience,
yeah.
And they come in already focused on how that they call a game.
Yeah, that's what he said basically. Anyway, if you pass or if you graduate, I guess for the term, he said you get into the. I don't know if it was the rookie or the A, whatever, the schlump league. He said, they give you a partner, and you and the partner, they give you a crummy little car, and you drive from game to game, and you share a motel room. Like motel, we're not talking about,
Not hotel.
Not hotel. And If you make it through there and you get promoted like to double A, then they give you like a big Tahoe because it's three people. And then you get your own room at the Motel 6, basically. And AAA, if you're going from like Des Moines to Salt Lake City, well, then you get to fly. But I'm thinking, it's really a long slog for these guys. And I don't know that it was something that a lady would necessarily want to go through, traveling like that with one guy and then two guys and then three guys. It took an awful lot of, stick-to-itiveness for this lady to make it through, and I bet she does a great job. Why wouldn't she? I mean, it's just a really long... Plus, those guys, he said he would get on to Venezuela before Venezuela got to be a crazy state, and he said it was great umpiring down there. He's no replays. You make the call. They like the call to be right, but you make the call, they play. It's just like, okay, that's it. Batter up. You know? He said it was great fun down there. He said then all of a sudden we got too dangerous. Nobody go anymore. But the guys would go. They go hone their craft in the winter ball down in. Remember when we were younger, everybody would get the. They'd all go play winter ball in Venezuela. But now, of course, nobody does that. Now, I don't know where they get the guys for like the Cape Cod League and all those guys, whether they're single A or double A guys or what they are. But it's an interesting profession, and these guys, I mean, they take it very seriously, and it's so funny that people on you watch TV, they'll make like five bad calls a game, and everybody thinks, oh God, these guys suck. I mean, you know how hard that is. Watch these good pitchers. What percentage of the pitches are right on the edge? Like 80% of them?
Easy.
I mean, anybody who thinks, I shouldn't give my opinion, but FBI agents dispatched to fight local crime in D.C. while Trump vows to immediately clear out the city's homeless.
You gotta do something, Swamp.
Is there any limit to the power this guy thinks he has, and is everybody happy with it?
I have no idea, but I do. You know, we wanted to mention one of our great astronauts did.
Yeah,
pass.
You did some work on this.
Yes, Jim Lovell. Jim Lovell had passed at 97. I had found out from my father, in a strange, interesting way, that my mother knew Mrs. Lovell. She had passed 2 years earlier. She had met them at a place in Arizona, did not know that they were astronauts' wives, and she introduced herself to a Mrs. Armstrong, who said, "Hey, are you Billy Lawler's wife? I went to high school with him." This was Neil Armstrong's first wife, actually did go to high school with my father. And
that was where? Up
New Trier.
New Trier, okay.
She was from Winnetka.
Didn't Hillary Clinton go to New Trier?
No, she lived in Park Ridge. Margaret went to New Trier. Charleston Heston went to New Trier.
You gotta go grab Matt?
Yeah, I think I do. Hold on.
Yeah, those guys, if anybody who's never... the movie was terrific. And just the amount of teamwork it took to get those guys back in one piece. The interest in how those guys really didn't have any... Their computing stuff was not very much. They didn't have a whole lot of backup. But they had guys, they had a team. It absolutely is a study in what humans can accomplish if they want to. If you want to is the whole key in a lot of this stuff. And there never was any... I remember them saying to somebody asking him the question, what if you... Actually, it was to a different astronaut, but they're all kind of the same in this regard. I mean, it's, don't want to say that, but one guy says, "What if you were on the moon and the lunar landing wouldn't start? What would you do knowing you were going to die?" I said, "I'd spend the entire time trying to fix it. Why would I be thinking of dying? I'd be working my ass off trying to fix it." It's just kind of a different, somewhat of a different mentality on a lot of, some of these dudes from other people, and we could use a little of that kind of. And there's some of that today. It's not like it's, but these guys were interesting people. This whole kind of World War II, just after generation. I mean, they really didn't think you know, tomorrow was promised to them so much. It was just a different. You got on a team and you were a team. But these guys were, I mean, they weren't fearless. I mean, you have to. I mean, there's no way you can be fearless in any of this stuff. I mean, how could you be? But the they were guys that just were, you know, they were able to just kind of see past the moment. And maybe you get yourself so locked into what you're doing, so locked into your training, that you don't even think about it. I know the one time that Chuck Yeager had a bailout was in the book, The Right Stuff. They had this experimental plane, and up he goes, and the thing was kind of a piece of crap. Imagine that. And he's up there, and all of a sudden this didn't work, that didn't work. And he ended up having this where he got the scar on his face. It was almost some of the stuff that blows you out of the seat whacked on his face on the way down. And he said, what you do is your training is immediately kicks in. Okay, that doesn't work. What's next? That doesn't work. What's next? And it's just the mentality is, you know, you continue to follow your sequence. Your training is especially if you've made it that far, your training is so good, you just keep following the sequence. You don't even try and, you don't sit there and wait, oh man, what if this doesn't work? I mean, that's what happens when people aren't trained. And it's you can see this sometimes, you don't see it too often, Jimmy, in real life. Talk about a wacky story. We go to a White Sox game, and Larry, who works with us, his wife, talk about a weird story. This is way back in the day. We're talking about the 80. And Merrill Lynch decided, it was back when they were giving firms like a lot of heat for having high-end tickets and writing them off and stuff. So Merrill Lynch decides to be good people in the world.
Oh, no, not writing off tickets.
Yeah,
no.
And so they gave up their Sox tickets. And they were like maybe the second or third row behind home plate, maybe the fifth or sixth row. They were pretty good, Neil. But the old stadium was so screwed up, for those that don't know. The when they put in the Ryan, Dan Ryan Expressway, the field was not high enough. So they kept, whenever the expressway backed up, it would like back up onto the field, you know, which you don't necessarily want to have happen. And so they kept making the field higher, to where if you were in the first row behind home plate, second base was over your head. If you can imagine that. So anyway, these guys get Sarah. She's got the tickets, so they give the two tickets. Somehow she gives them to Audrey. So off we go to the game, and in there, of course, we get to the seats, and Audrey goes, "Oh no, wait a minute! You got to get the ushers to boot those guys out." Hey, what do you mean, boot those guys out? Well, somebody stole the tickets on the way to Sarah's house. So somebody had the real tickets, and they gave her a whole new set. So every time he went to the game, he had to boot the people out, which, of course, didn't feel that good, right? So we get there. By the time, turns out the guy, Father's Day was the next day, so the guy has to kick out a kid who had bought the tickets to take his dad to the game. And I'm like, hey, we'll sit somewhere else. It's not that important to me. Plus, by this time, it's the bottom of the first. Sox are down 10-0. Right, so, all right, so they boot the guys out. They were nice. They gave them seats somewhere else. They didn't kick them out or anything. Just said, okay, by the way, who'd you get the tickets from? You know, that's back when people actually cared about actually solving crimes. So they, all of a sudden, a foul ball comes back, and this is before you had the nets. And it landed, whacks this girl right above the eye. I mean, I don't think it hit her in the eye, thank God. But she got whacked right above the eye. And you know how you get hit there, or how much you're bleeding, right?
Oh yeah.
She's bleeding all over the place. So about 15 people around her just scatter. They head as fast as they can away from her, which interesting. Some guy couldn't have been 2 seconds. Jimmy, he's got a clean handkerchief out of his pocket, putting pressure on the wound. He moved toward the problem, not away from it, where everybody else is scattering. And I wonder, what what training did that guy have? He had to be from somebody, Army or something. Or just was a good guy or whatever. But the reaction was instantaneous on like 20 people. 19 one way and one the other way. And I'm saying these astronaut guys were the guys that went the other way, right?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. But again, I mean, you look at most of them, they were test pilots. So they were trained to know to figure out what happens when something goes wrong, because you're right, like Chuck Yeager, they're putting him up in an experimental aircraft. They're not sure that this aircraft will even fly.
Well, getting it up, and they always went up. The question is, how are they going to get them down? Of course, they were out at, which became, used to be called Merak. Now it's what?
Miramar.
Yeah. Which is out in a huge desert, so you sort of had the whole desert was your runway.
Very true.
But anyway, an interesting passing. What do you make of the starting of the football? We got your Bears are heading out to Arlington Heights, allegedly.
Well, I mean, I was at the Sox game, and we watched a little of the Bears game before the Sox game started. I thought it was very interesting that the Dolphins had Tulua starting when everybody else, all their starters, were not playing yesterday. But the Dolphins had Tua play for at least a quarter.
Well, it's somewhat of a interesting deal those guys have, that if you hardly hit it all in practice, and all of a sudden the first game everybody's trying to kill each other and all fresh, the injuries the first week are usually pretty high. So you sort of have to, you want people to get used to it without getting hurt. How do you do that?
I don't know. They do have those new helmets that they wear during practice. They look like they have bubble wrap on top of the helmet, but I know some guys actually play with those helmets.
Yeah, you can play with them now, I think.
Yeah. I don't know. I just thought it was very weird because when I had gotten home from the game, I, you know, flipped through a couple of the other preseason games, and nobody's starters were dressed. But the Dolphins did play theirs.
Well, the Bears played, didn't they practice together 2 days this week or something?
Yes, they did.
So they had pretty spirited practices, I think, Thursday and Friday.
I'm sure they did. I heard the Bears looked pretty good in practice. That new kid, the tight end that we drafted, looks pretty good. On the quarterbacks, our current third string quarterback, Casey Keenum, probably looked the best. Bagent still has a issue. There are a couple times he's being pressured, and you can tell he's throwing off the back foot because the ball's sailing on him. It is preseason. This is the time to work this stuff out.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know how good the Bears are going to be, obviously. Neither does anybody, but it's...
They got a tough schedule.
Yeah.
We were talking to a guy at the bar, and he brought up something that did kind of make sense. Has Detroit gotten any worse? The answer is no. Is the Packers any worse? No. And are the Vikings any worse? The answer, he said in all three words, no. And that's our division. Now, they are starting the rookie in Minnesota, J.J. McCarthy, out of Michigan. But when you look at it, the Packers aren't really changed. The Lions are still probably the top of the league in our division. So where does that leave us?
Well, Green Bay and Minnesota aren't schlumps either.
No. Matt LaFleur has our number. His record against us is considerable. I mean, I think he's only lost one out of seven games playing against us. So he seems to know how to get the Packers up for beating the Bears.
Well, I think the Packers are generally better than the Bears. I mean,
right? I think that they are better coached. They probably have a little bit of a better team, and I'm a Bears fan.
They've always drafted way better. Just saying.
Okay.
I mean, I did it was a while ago. It might have been, 8 years ago. I did a whole thing with Matt Weber, who was always talking about the Bears and the drafting. And I went back like 15 years or 12 years, and the Bears drafts. First of all, the Packers ended up with a way, way many more picks. The Bears were so anxious to trade theirs away. And it was, he went back and ordered the bundle of picks, say seven a year. Well, you're supposed to get seven. Packers usually had more than seven. The Bears had less. And if you went, and they had a grading system, whatever site I was on. It wasn't grading. They just said, okay, still on the team, starter reserve. Anywhere else in football, starter reserve. Anywhere else in football, out. You know, not even anywhere. And the Packers had, you know, out of maybe, say, 7 years, out of 49 people, or say 6 years, 42 people, like 20 of them were still on the Packers. Like 10 more were still in football somewhere, and maybe only 12 were busts, where the Bears had like four guys that were still on their team, and most of them weren't even in football. I mean, it was an amazing, and they ended up, they had like 15 less picks or something, which is even more bizarre. I mean, just a, you know, kind of a crazy deal, but it wasn't just, you know, the guys that they picked in the fifth and sixth and round weren't even in football. Which, you know, and but the Packers had, like, virtually those, the offensive linemen they had when Rodgers was there, all those guys were their picks, just about. Where the Bears, none of them were. They were all from some other place. It's just kind of crazy stuff. But still, I mean, I guess the wild card's a possibility, you know, I don't know. But anyway, what do you say we go to break? SP Futures up 7, NASDAQ Futures up 8. We've come down a little bit. I'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
With all due respect, what the f- are you talking about?
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe, Matt Byrne on the board, Jimmy Lawler in studio. I have John Flanagan on Zoom here in a second, I would assume. S&P futures are up 7, NASDAQ futures up 875. We are, we were up more than that, but we are still up. We've got Trump warning homeless in Washington, D.C. He's got the FBI out doing local work in Washington, D.C. I'm not sure how that plays in anywhere, but I guess everybody seems to like all this stuff. I'm not sure I'm into this at all, but that would just be me. Is he coming up with this stuff himself, Jimmy, or does he have a bunch of people around him that are... I don't even want to describe what they must be thinking, but...
That is a good question. Yeah. we kind of debated it. My older brother came by.
Well, why don't we finish this? DAX down 75, 0.3%. The FTSE up 22.2%. CAC around down 33.4%. Over in Asia, we've got the Asia-Pacific market subdued. Nikkei didn't look that subdued. It's up 761, 1.8%. Hang Seng up 47.2. Shanghai up 12.3. I wouldn't call the Nikkei subdued, up 700 points. But I didn't write that headline. 10-year Treasury down 1, 4.27. The Bund unchanged, 2.69. It was a way of review on Friday. Dow was up 200. S&P up 49. NASDAQ up 207. Oil, we have oil up 22 cents, 64.10, but under 65. Ouch. Brent up 25 cents, 66.84. Arbob unchanged, 209. Gold, whack whack this morning, down 83 bucks, 34.07. Gold markets fall as White House clarity on bullion tariffs. Why does every single thing go back to the White House? Every single piece of trading goes back to the mouth in the White House. This is not my world, Jimmy. It just isn't, but I guess it is now. Silver down 70 cents, almost 2%. Copper down 2 cents, 65 cents. Foreign exchange. The British, 116. The euro is 116. So we're in the middle of this latest range. The pound sterling, 134. So again, both between the... That's been 135 plus down to 133. Now it's in the middle. We have Bitcoin. Big rally, 1900. New record, 120. 595, or I think it's a new record. Not sure. So fake stocks are doing well as well. Matt, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Yeah, good morning, everyone. It's currently 6:38 a.m. on August 11th, 2025. Let's look at traffic real quick. Inbound on the Kennedy from O'Hare to Jane Brent Interchange at 32 minutes. Outbound at 18. Inbound on the Eisenhower from Thorndale to JB at 30 minutes. Outbound at 29. Weather for Chicago for today, 75 degrees at O'Hare and 76 at Midway. High of around 87 today, slight chance of showers and thunderstorms. Tonight, 40% chance of thunderstorms and a low of 72. Meanwhile, down in Phoenix, Arizona, 95 degrees right now. Partly cloudy with a chance of sun in the afternoon and temperatures set to reach 109 degrees today. Also with sports, the MLB White Sox at home against Guardians. Sox won 6-4. Cubs, meanwhile, away at Cardinals. Cubs lost 3-2. That's all I got, Chief. Back to you.
We have Mr. Flanagan?
We do. We also have Kevin as well.
Oh, we got Kevin. John, how are you? Kevin, how are you?
Good morning, all.
Kevin, I think you are correct. The live stream is not working. We have to try and get that working today. I don't know what the story is with that. I know I paid my bill, so I'm not too sure what the story is there. Sometimes they switch servers and don't tell you, so we'll have to get back on with those guys. So, John, how was your weekend?
That was hot, you know, and I'm used to that by now. And, you know, a couple forays outdoors for the shop and stuff, but generally it's been a tough summer, I think. It was a real fatigue factor from the heat, so.
Well, we had a terrific, to what, about the middle of June. It was 70s and every day, and it was nice and cool here, even though it was hot around the rest of the country, and all of a sudden we got the change away. And we went to the hot and humid. But we were nice for a while.
Yeah.
I mean,
And it's been that way, you know, going on 2 months now.
So. It's been a while. I mean, it's not like it was yesterday, that's for sure. What do you make of? I was reading this thing this morning about this Nvidia, and how the government's now going to get 14% of all the sales to China. What is your feeling on all this? I always start out this with a story. I feel like Jimmy Stewart, one of his old movies. The issue I have, I went, well, my buddy John Nigerian, Dr. J, got us this speaking engagements over in Europe. And I had never been over there, so I was pretty happy to go, I guess. And, I was happy to go. It was going to be a good time. And we head over, we went to Austria, and we went to Credit and Stalt. How's that for a name of a place? This bank that had been there for, like, God knows how long. And we actually were up in the boardroom, and none of the people to lecture had ever been up on that floor, much less in the boardroom, right? So anyway, up we go, we're giving lectures, and, you know, it's a whole different world. Then we went to, what was the place in Germany? Deutsche Bank. Not Deutsche Bank, Dresdner Bank, that ended up getting bought by Deutsche Bank, because everything here gets bought, right? So we're out there, and we went out and had many, many cocktails with all the younger people, and it was, Janet, it was a world totally different than I had ever seen. I mean, here I am on the trading floor, and everybody's kind of somewhat entrepreneurial. There's a lot of people in Chicago that have their own businesses and all this stuff, and just kind of a, you know, that was our world. And over there, you talk to all these young people that work in the banks, and they're all trading options. So finally, you know, I'm not the dumbest rock, they get all these positions, and all the individual companies are owned, some of them 80%, 85% by the banks, which we never had here. And then the banks got their nose firmly up the ass of the government. So I'm sitting there going, this is, and all the young guys and girls, there's a lot of, young people of both sexes working in all these places. The attitude was so much different than here. Only the wealth was all in the old people. The good jobs were all in the old people. They were all the partners. You didn't expect to be in the only own house till you were in your 40s, because all you did was work someplace and share a room with somebody, and you didn't make squat until all of a sudden maybe enough people croaked where they had to promote somebody. And it was a world that I just never really understood. Everything was kind of controlled by somebody, by something. It was the federal government through the banks, through, you know, and as Lou eventually described it, it was a very fascist system, in the sense that there's only a few companies in any industry, all with the nose firmly up the ass of government, tied into the political process, and the government was fairly, you know, involved, for lack of a better term, which is kind of so much different than here. And when I finally left, it almost felt like economically I needed to take a shower. I just hated it. It was so disturbing to me. Young people that weren't entrepreneurial, there was no such thing as a trading floor. If you traded, you were a bank employee. And I said, God, I hope we never get like that. And you know what, Bud? We're there. And I think it's horrendous. Same conversation you could take the young people that we meet sometimes on a Thursday or Friday night, take the same conversation and turn it to, into talking to those people. It's the same damn thing. And how did we get there? By whose vote are we here? Now we got a guy in the White House, whether or not you like him or don't like him, or hate the Democrats enough to where you feel you have to like him, something along those lines. The guy is doing business out of there. Everything now is controlled by it. Wants to be controlled by the government. Companies are like paying homage, literally, to the place. I mean, where do you think we're heading? I mean, and this is not a left or right question. Is that where you want to go, like economically? I mean, I don't.
Well, I see it differently, Tom. I see what's happening now. You know, government versus the banks as blowback from, you know, a couple of decades of, you know, the banks and the government being deeply intertwined. And I think that's the situation I think you're describing.
So you think Trump is actually helping the situation? I think he's hurting it. I mean, to me, it's not even close.
Well, I don't know if he's, how much he's helping the situation yet, but I think what he's, you know, how he's positioned himself is, you know, a rejection of the conditions you're talking about.
Well, but he's the one who signed the deal with NVIDIA. He's the one who signed the deal with U.S. Steel. Can you get more up government's ass than that?
Well, those are, you know, particular industries. You know?
Okay.
I think there's been a, in some ways, you know, this is where, why, you know, the United States has lost out pretty much vis-a-vis Japan and other places.
Why do you think it lost out? Because he told you so? If he didn't say that, would you ever thought you lost out?
Well, the government took such a hands-off policy when it came to, say, the auto industry. And that's completely alien in the rest of the world.
But that's what makes us special, doesn't it?
That an industry that important has got, you know, government written all over it, because, you know, the government sinks or swims, you know, based on what some of those industries are doing. And the U.S., you know, pretended that wasn't the case, and, you know, avoided giving the impression that there was any intermingling between government and industry. And you're seeing, you know, kind of the fruits of that, you know, after 30 or 40 years of that policy. So that wasn't good either.
Well, I mean, I don't. So you want government to identify the survivors. You don't want any entrepreneurship, and you want young people to can't get into an industry if their life depends on it.
I don't know. I mean, I'd say that you want government to have a stake in the outcome, certainly.
Why?
So that it's taken seriously.
So, in order for me to exist at PTI, I should have to pay an homage to the government, or else they kick me out?
Well, I'm not saying your industry is like the auto industry.
Well, who gets to decide?
Well, I don't know. Not the auto industry, I guess.
Well, I mean, what about our industry? Should it just be five firms you got to trade through?
Well,
or four or three?
It going that way?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm not saying it's not nobody's world. I'm saying it's not my world. I think it's horrendous. I can't even go there with it. Whatever.
Well, it was a bad marriage for a long time in this country between, you know, a hands-off approach and a government that was, you know, totally reckless in almost every other, you know, corner of the economy, whether it came to regulation or you know, stupid regulation, pretty much. And now we've got, you know, everybody's caught in the middle. I think government has gotten so enmeshed in everybody's lives, from the moment you get up in the morning to when you go to bed at night or when you die, the government is there somewhere. I don't like that at all.
Well, I don't understand how.
I think they were negligent in many other ways, where they took no position or no interest in, you know, coordination of international trade or anything else, and expected everybody to just go off and, you know, do it while we look the other way. That's why we got the messy situation with China, pretty much. That never would have happened if the government were more observant of what was happening. The government didn't care.
I'm
using that term very loosely. I mean, just across the board.
So you're looking for an economic emperor is what you're looking for.
Everybody in Congress has got, you know, a piece of this action. So the government is, you know, totally involved in what happens in China, and to the point where we don't really have an independent policy and haven't for some time. I think the Chinese have been pulling the strings here for quite a while. But it's so insidious. Nobody, you know, takes responsibility for it. Nobody seems to want to change it either.
So you want an economic emperor?
You want economic power somewhere in the government, at least as a watchdog.
Somewhere?
At least, you know, somewhere. Yeah. It doesn't have to be an emperor, but, you know.
Well, I don't know how you... So, in other words, for anybody to enter a business, you have to run through... You want us to become China?
No, I don't like that.
Well, that's what they do.
We've used that as our model, sir, both parties. So, and we've got emperors already, don't we?
I'm kind of stunned at what we're talking about here, to be honest with you.
Well, I mean, whatever you want to call, you know, Gates or Musk or, you know, the banks or, you know, whatever. They're emperors in that they're, you know, they wield tremendous power. They're, you know, they've got, you know, the same kind of imperial designs, it seems, as that an emperor would, but they're tolerated and they're even subsidized. So,
well, let's not confuse the inability to do any kind of antitrust at this end with be having an economic emperor and saying that's our program. I mean,
Antitrust policy, Tom, would require the government to be more, you know, involved than it chooses to be. But that's the kind of control I'm talking about, where, you know, if the government were behind, you know, competitiveness in this country, let alone on the international stage, we wouldn't be in the mess we are. But they haven't been.
All right. So you think it's okay for Trump to have a veto power over U.S. Steel's policy?
I think he's entitled to have an interest in whether it stays here or in Japan, yeah.
All right.
I mean, when has this not been?
I'm saying this is
nationalized steel industry.
But in time of war, my point is, in general, you know, the idea that there used to be 2,000 traders and now there's five companies, and the only way you can even be in the industry is to work for like those five or six people, to me is appalling. Now, if we're going to start doing that all across the board, that's kind of tough. I mean, in every industry, do you have to have, if you don't have your, I use the term the Chinaman, as they say in China, if you don't have your guy that's into government, you can't get in business? I mean, is that where we're headed here?
But isn't one of the reasons there's, you know, the trading industry has been so consolidated is that the government has decided that you have to enforce stuff that the government used to?
No. No, it has nothing to do with that. It has rules that allow people to do stuff. The reason why there's payment for order flow on the stock side is because they've allowed some people to trade within the minimum. It used to be everybody had to trade on the edge. I mean, if the minimum tick was an eighth or a sixteenth or a dime or a nickel, whatever it was, that's where everybody had to trade. And you couldn't trade ahead of anybody. But now, if IBM is trading 274.72 less, up 45 cents. So in other words, if somebody wanted to get payment for order flow, you'll get filled at 242.729 and not at 0.723, because they get to trade within the middle. So if you're offered at 73, you don't get filled as a retail person. They can take it a tenth of a cent under and tell you that you're actually doing better as the purchaser, but as the seller, you're only going to make your sale when it actually is higher than where you want to sell it. It's totally an insidious system. It's totally screwed up. If they stopped that tomorrow, the markets would be totally different. And that's a rule that the big firms have in there, and they're not going to let it go. Now, when I was on the trading floor, you didn't get to do that. The minimum was an eighth, and you had to pay the eighth. And if you were in the book as a retail trader, and they put you in the book, you had to be traded. They had to trade with you first at that price. Now there's nothing like that. It's exactly the opposite. They can be every time that there was a trade. If I saw there was a 50 lot in the book, at any given moment, I'd have been happy to sell something at 40, and instead of 40.125, I'd have sold it at 40.124. Because if it was right, the next tick is down and I make money. If it's wrong, I turn around, buy the book, and I lose a tenth of a cent. So what? This isn't just all... It just didn't all happen because it was good stuff, John.
But would you say that's a lack of government oversight?
No, it's people... No, it's some firms getting their nose up the ass of government and excluding other people from the business and saying it's good. And you got a population that said, well, that's fine. My commissions are free. They're not free. They're not.
Well, if there's any blowback, is it going to have to come from the government then? It sounds like the government.
No, name me one out of 1,000 traders who just know what I just said. Any retail people? I was talking to we went to this housewarming party. It was actually a really nice Greek family, and of course the father must trade all day, and he finds out. And I traded on the floor and I'm a brokerage firm, so of course the guy's on me all night long. And he goes, yeah, I trade. So I said, what do you trade through? You got a decent firm? Because, you know, of course, we have a firm. Oh, yeah, I trade through like Robinhood. Everything's free. I said, well, it's not really free. What do you mean? I said, well, what business have you been in? Well, I'm in the restaurant business. I said, fine. If I were to ask you who is your customer, you might say that the people who pay you is the customer, correct? He goes, well, absolutely. I said, what do you think pays Robinhood if you don't? What do you mean? I said, the people that they do your trades through. So their job used to be to get you the best fill. All right, and now it's to get paid by the other side. So who do you think is really the customer? And he goes, well, God, I never thought of that. And I said, well, if you're not paying anybody, you're not the customer. Sorry. Duh. I mean, it's just, I don't know where are we going. We had a system that was allegedly free, and we all know that some firms, you know, the specialist firms in New York, they all had a special relationship with the SEC because they were old money, they were this and that. And all of a sudden, a guy named Elliot Spitzer comes and rocks the boat. And why is he rocking the boat? Well, because some of the specialists were crooks. I mean, when people on the CBOE floor, they could tell you chapter and verse what the rules were in New York. Is at one point, something like 60% of all stock trades came from the floors of the options exchanges, or was it 40? Some huge number, and they could tell you which guys obeyed the rules and which guys didn't. And the New York, man, you know, because it was all money, they pretty much hit all these guys. And Elliot Spitzer shows up, and I don't know if he was attorney general or wherever hell he was in New York or something. He goes, we're not putting up with this. He must have got some complaints. And he went after the people in New York. Well, talk about why do you think the guy's not in office anymore? because they couldn't wait to get back at him. Now, you know, and he wasn't perfect, which gave them a way to get at him, but that, you know, that's his problem. But fact is, why were they looking at him? They're looking at him because he was a traitor to his class. And right now, I mean, we're going down this. I mean, I see the despair in the younger people now the same way. It's the same conversation. This is 1991 we're having with these people in Germany. I don't want, you know, 500 people here to have all the money in the world and have all the stocks, even though I want stocks going up for my clients and me. I don't want that. And yet, I'm just one guy. I mean, I know that. That is not our future, I don't think. But evidently, it is for a while. You know, when we'll see what happens. Just saying, it's not healthy. We had other companies. I mean, even though the big three autos were pretty big for a while, they ended up having competition from overseas, right? They ended up having competition, and they ended up having to change their shtick, or else nobody wanted to buy their cars. I mean, it took a while. They were pretty protected. You're right. You know, how many automobile? Did you ever go to Auburn Duesenberg Cord Museum?
I haven't been there, but it's old, you know, those are legendary cars.
But, well, I went there to see the cars, of course. And let's just say, even you and I get lucky in an Auburn Bobtail Speedster, man. Just saying. Or maybe a doozy. Might take a Duesenberg for Jimmy to get lucky. Who knows? But the those things were, talk about works of art. But as more I got into the place, me being the knothead that I am, all of a sudden there's a history there that I never even knew. There used to be something like 25 automakers in Indiana that would put cars together. They were coachmakers. They used to be guys that did, you know, carriages. All of a sudden, instead of putting the wheels on the carriage, they made the bodies for the car, and somebody made the front end, somebody made the motors. There was this relentless combination in that business till you got down to three. I mean, obviously, we were in South Bend. Studebaker was a fourth. It was American Motors was a fourth for a while, right? Remember the Nash Rambler?
Oh yeah. Well, and if you go back 100+ years, I mean, there were auto manufacturers in Kokomo, you know, Haynes Apperson, all these, you know, cars nobody's ever heard of anymore. But the name of the game then was innovation. And
not really. Look how innovative Tucker was. I couldn't wait to put that guy out of business.
Yeah, it was so innovative. It was out of business. You know?
Yeah.
But the idea was that, you know, there was all sorts of experimentation that was, you know, steam automobiles, electric automobiles, all, you know, engine design, chassis design, you know, mass production, all this stuff was, you know, feverish, you know, at one time. And, you know, the smart, you know, tycoons, you know, picked and chose what they wanted, you know, to do and could do better, and, you know, bought out, consolidated, and, you know, put people on their boards for a while, and then, you know, gradually the thing was completely absorbed. There's no vestige anymore what had gone into it. But that's kind of what happens in a business that grows so fast and becomes so essential to consumers. There's going to be big winners and there's going to be big losers, and, you know, it changes from day to day, and then you throw it into the international market, and it becomes, you know, absolutely impossible to even monitor very effectively, let alone control. So that's kind of what has happened with capitalism. It's not a bad thing. It's kind of what.
Well, what chance does somebody, if the government's getting a chunk of all the money of ADM and NVIDIA, what are the chances of somebody else breaking into that market?
Pretty low.
Oh, is that what you want?
No, well, you know, it's not so much that, you know, I think the government has been subverted, Tom. It isn't that you're really opposed to government control, I suspect. But you are opposed, as I am too, to government that is, you know, able to be bought.
Well, and we're right there.
Yeah. I mean, that's an important distinction, though, you know. But I'd opt for a stronger government that was, you know, less seducible. Or at least give the appearance of fairness in how it was seduced, you know, it gave everybody a chance, but didn't just allow itself to become an arm of some powerful, you know, corner of the market. Supposedly.
Well, that's exactly where we're heading, it
yeah,
appears to
I,
me.
I agree. And it's, you know, totally, you know it's now got the momentum behind it. I don't know how you reverse that.
I think you have to have.
It's going to take somebody stronger than these government agencies.
We have to have a vision of somebody who's not just. I mean, I don't know who in the Biden or whoever administration it was, who maybe they didn't get a piece. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. They might have been too dumb to get a piece. Who got a piece of all the money that went to Tesla and these other places for the, you know, for the electronic, all these subsidies and stuff? I mean, maybe they didn't. Well, Trump is at least enough of a carpetbagger. He wants a piece because he realized how valuable it is. Well, I don't know which is worse. I mean, these guys, did they actually think that the electronic cars? I mean, why can Illinois still can't find a way to tax them on the road? I mean, it's, I mean, somehow or another, there is, why was Amazon allowed to not charge taxes for 15 years to get them off the ground when everybody else paid? I mean, now I'm thinking.
Well, that's a case of, you know, government seduction by private industry, which is not private at all. Amazon's got more power than probably most national governments.
But it sort of never ends. And the thing is,
you add Walmart to that mixture too, Tom. You can add almost, I mean, not, and you know, Walmart doesn't produce anything per se, except, you know, build stores and has a, you know, delivery system and so on. But it really controls production. This was, you know, kind of the Amazon design too. If you become the retailer of choice, so that nobody else can compete with you or is allowed to compete with you, is really the case. Then you become the dictator of how production is done, where it's done, how much it gets paid for. You know, this is why, you know, Walmart could dictate the price of what they'll sell a microwave for, and that translates back to the production end of it, where you can't charge more than what Walmart tells you you can charge. So you might as well have a government doing that.
Well, I don't know about that, but...
But I mean, what's the difference?
What I'm saying, if you don't have...
They're both as monolithic and difficult to deal with. So,
but you can't join. I don't think you have to have some kind of an idea how the world's supposed to operate, morally or whatever, legally. You can't just, and that's the problem I find with a lot of the younger people. It's been screwed up for so long. That's just the way it's supposed to be. You know, that's not really what you and I grew up with. I mean, there's some morality to this, how we all want to live together. It's not, well, yeah, they've been stealing that for a while. I guess that's the way it ought to be. I you know what I'm saying? It's just, you can...
Did you catch the piece in, I just saw it late last night, by Rahm Emanuel in yesterday's Washington Post about, you know, the problem the Democrats have, and not just the Democrats, but the problem with young men and their despondency. And he's kind of making this as, you know, I think a trial run for a presidential run, but it's, you know, it has to do with some of the things we're talking about. That, you know, when you can't buy a home for a family that you've, you know, kind of prepared yourself to have and to raise and to do right by, because homes are unaffordable, and you can't, you know, get a decent job, and you've been frozen out, you know, of academic life and everything else, this is dead weight, not just on the economy, but on, you know, people's lives. It causes a reduction in life expectancy, which nobody really wants to talk about. And Emanuel doesn't really talk about it in this piece either, but it's definitely haunting the article. But I suspect it's going to be, you know, something that he'll have to apologize for having written, because he's using it as a way of leveraging some spot in the Democratic Party to get some...
He could, you know, just be telling the truth.
Well, yeah, that alone is anathema these days. So I'm just saying he's you know, saying, you know...
Well, I just said, does that mean I'm running for president?
No, but I think he's posturing it because nobody else is really, you know, at least not on the Democrat side, nobody is willing to say this. So if you're looking for a new message, or one that's been drowned out by all the craziness of the last 20 years, he's, you know, taking a shot at it. I don't know if it's going to open any doors for him or if it's going to free up any donor money. I think he's going to have, you know, a tough road.
Yeah, but we try and tell the truth on the show. We're not doing it because somebody's going to pay us.
Right, but you know, he's got to make this pay in a way.
Why?
If he's got any dream of running for president.
Yeah, but maybe he just doesn't like You think Andrew and Wayne do this stuff because they think they're going to be president?
Well, I'm saying if somebody wants to be president, this is the kind of messaging I would aim for.
Well, if somebody wants
to... Nobody else is saying it. And most people like you and I and a lot of other people believe it. So,
well,
you can't say it. You can't say it as a mainstream Democrat. Yeah.
Well, I mean, what is... There is... There's a whole subject. the Democratic Party, and I think the Republican Party to a certain extent, is totally lost. Now, somebody has to recreate... Somebody or somebodies has to recreate the what the party means. I mean, there's people who that I know of that voted for Trump that think he's turned into a madman. Yet there's no Democratic Party to fall back to, because whatever this group is, they're just as crazy as the people totally crazy on the right, in my opinion. Now somebody has to recreate a Democratic Party. I was actually in one of the places that Jimmy and I frequent on occasion, one of the bartenders, I've known her forever, she now just got her psychology degree of all things, and she was talking about, we talked for a second about politics, and I said, what do you think the Democratic Party needs? She goes, they need a very serious, older, white guy to say, this is where we're going, this is, whatever all this other stuff is a piece of our constituency, it's not our party. And needs to rekindle the people that fled like me. And she goes, unless you find that guy, they got a problem. And Emmanuel, I don't know if he's trying to be the guy, he's trying to find the guy, he's trying to do nothing, he's trying to write a book. I don't know what he's doing, but simple fact is somebody has to say, we're not all about woke. and by the way, we're going to have that group of people here and we're going to deal with them, but that's... These are here. These are our plans, and they don't have anything to do with that. Somebody has to do that, John, or there's no party.
Well, I mean, I agree with, your friend to an extent. I just think that, if somebody old, and Emmanuel's 59, he's too old now already, I think, unfortunately.
I
would never have said that, but in the climate we were in today, I don't see any 59-year-old white guy being listened to.
Well, I'm saying somebody better listen. Somebody better listen to stuff we're talking about on this show. God, it's right out there in front of everybody, for God's sake.
Well, who's it going to be?
Well, I don't know. But I mean, it has to come from...
Tom, who could it be?
I don't
see anybody older than Emmanuel having the nerve.
I refuse to believe that... on either side of the aisle, I don't know, John. Maybe there isn't. Maybe there aren't people with the. I'm not saying you had to be in the military or anything like that. We don't seem to have this background of people that have, this track record of treating people well, being successful, be it in politics or business, seemingly to the point where they are pretty much beyond reproach. I mean, nobody's perfect. But that they can seem to deal in here, and it can somehow... You have to have such a powerful base to deal with the money that's behind this stuff. Otherwise, you get tossed out. You'll be like Elliot Spitzer. You'll be somebody. Or you'll be greased in, like Obama. You know, where all of a sudden everything the water's parked for you. Because somehow or another, somebody... I don't know. All this stuff, this Lady Webb, I've been listening to some of her stuff. The amount of people that seem to be... in like a tick on a dog the government can't do anything about, that's a problem. And I don't know, I'm not so sure if there was somebody like that, why would he want the job? You couldn't have a family, I don't think, because they'd be open to God knows what. I don't know what you need here. I mean, we need like a Lincoln or a Roosevelt, and I don't see us getting one. I mean, there may be somebody out there, but he's probably already moved to Europe, for God's sake, or she. I mean, why would anybody want the job? I mean, the stuff we talked about in the last 6 months, and the things, it used to be, I always thought that if five or six of us could drop in the Oval Office for a week, we could do some good. First thing I'd do is head out to the Rose Garden. Because I don't see, what would you almost have to do? I mean, does anybody in the antitrust department even know how to do a case? I mean, who are the people around you? Are they any good? What are you going to do about this stuff? How are you going to get people who are so despondent all of a sudden thinking that their life can be better, and the people around them. And there is a lot of good. There was a piece in the Bourne Identity, the original Bourne Identity, where this guy got killed, and somebody gave a eulogy, and he said, the man believed that you could actually do public service, do a good job, and actually help people out, and do a nice job, and you were a credit to the world and to yourself and to your family. Does anybody believe that now? Everybody has an angle. Everybody's a crook. Everybody, you know, I don't know. We're degrading from within, and part of it, I think, is economic. If people felt they could do better, how many people do we have? People, Jimmy, you had a, not that a sore subject. Jimmy worked for a firm, and somebody was laid off 6 months ago. And what happened to him, Jimmy?
He is deceased. We don't know. The rumor is that they committed suicide.
Yeah. I mean, John, look at the amount of suicides and stuff. Nobody feels, part of it's COVID. We got to get our act together here. We're supposed to be leading the world. We're not doing crap in that regard, are we? I don't care how we do it. I think people have to have an idea that every day is a day you're supposed to do something. Supposed to make some dough. You're supposed to. The reason why you make some money is so you can give a bonus to yourself and your people and the families, and you can hire some more people and make life better. Isn't that the whole purpose of all this stuff?
Well, I just look around at, you know, retail politics as it's being, you know, pushed around in the big cities, and you know, New York is the most, you know, frightening example right now. But in some ways, that's totally predictable.
Sure it is.
And now you've got, you know, the elder wing of the party, you know, the Sanders and Elizabeth Warrens, who are all behind Mondani, and that's the future of the party. Well, I guess, you know, if you've been living on the Titanic most of your life, you know, that this is the last, you know, lifeline you got. But
really?
I mean, I just see that this is the, you know, the nail in the coffin for the Democratic Party. It's going to be something else by the time Mondani gets through to New York. So it won't be something that nobody will want to run on or associate themselves with. So this is bad for business all the way around. You know, the Republicans have got to be careful, because the thing that makes any party strong is when you've got a strong opposition, and you know go head to head, and you know, you strategize, but you need to be challenged in order to stay on your game. You know, it's like prize fighting. You're not going to look good if the, you know, person gets up and just, you know, falls over without being pushed. And I think that's the kind of climate we're in now, and I find it frightening as hell.
Well, this ridiculousness that's going down in Texas. And the little bit I know about it, to me, it is absolutely crazy in my regard. I mean, you're the census guy. It seems to me, and maybe you can do it every year. I don't know, but it seems like every 10 years the government says, you guys like lost a guy, or you gained a guy, or you did something, so you got to squeeze one in or pull one out, and you have to redistrict. And I think everybody kind of understands, maybe doesn't totally agree. I don't agree, but that. When you do this, and you're not going to use a random system, the party in power gets to somehow or another comes up on the top of that list. And you know, hopefully it's not too bad. And a lot of things can change in 10 years. People can move. They can do back and forth. It may backfire on the people who did it. Sometimes I think it does. Well, now all of a sudden it seems to me you got a system. Well, the last time I checked, we're not 2021 or 2031. They want to redistrict again in the middle, because now they have the advantage. Well, democracy can be a spectacular thing, but it also could be, you know, five wolves and a hen voting on what we should have for breakfast. And you can't do that either. So now all of a sudden this guy's doing this. People leave the state because he's got a quorum. He wants people to come back here, do their thing, lose the vote so they can do what he wants to do. Now, okay, but if all of a sudden every state does that, John, what a collective waste of time and money. What are we doing here?
I disagree completely.
I'm sure you do. It's the poor Republicans in Texas got screwed. I understand that. In every other state, everything's okay. I'm saying every single time you change...
Hasn't been okay, Tom, for a long time.
Okay, but...
By design.
All right, so every time you change the state house, you should redistrict.
Well, in Texas, their law permits them to do that.
Okay, it's a shit law.
If I were a state that had an explosion of population because of the way the Democrats have run states like, you know, California and Illinois, I'd be doing the same thing too.
Okay, that's the reason, because the Democrats.
Well, I mean, they have enormous shifts in population, Tom, towards the red.
All right, so what should it be? Instead of every 10 years, it should be every time you feel like it.
It's any time you've got evidence that it's, you know, shifting that way. All right, you don't want to wait 10 years.
So if
they can do, they're not barred from doing this, Tom. In other states, it's much more controlled, and they have to amend their constitutions if they want to do it differently. Not in Texas.
I'm with you. Just whatever year, whoever gets in charge, every year, redo it.
Well, the Texas situation is probably the most visible example of.
Well, it can't be too bad. The guy's the governor, and he's Republican.
But it's tilted massively beyond what the Democrats would like you to think about. So.
Well, now you know this.
And it's
how.
Not reflected. It's not reflected in their congressional delegation.
Okay, you notice how you've talked to this guy. You've actually went through the different districts.
I'm just saying the congressional districts and the Republican representation does not comport with their population.
Okay.
And that's certainly the case in Illinois. It's certainly the case in Massachusetts. It's certainly the case in California. Pick your state.
Okay. All right, my question...
It's all been by design, Tom.
I started the conversation by saying if you do it once every 10 years, everybody knows that the people in power are going to do a little better than the other people.
Like, well, you do it according to your individual state laws, which is what Texas is doing, and other states are, you know, have their hands
all
tied.
I asked, the question I asked was, doing it once a decade is a lot of argument when you should be arguing about something else, maybe. It's a lot of money. It's a lot of effort. Now are we going to do it four times?
Why wait 10 years, Tom, when you got election cycle for 2 years and the population changes so dramatic?
Your answer is you should do it every time you can.
Yeah. Every time it seems necessary.
Seems necessary to who?
To the people controlling the legislatures.
So if you're in control, you get to jury rig the whole thing, so you remain
in control.
Not jury
rig, but that's what the Democrats have done.
Republicans are not going to do anything like that.
Tom, we live in Illinois. You know what our congressional districts look like.
Okay.
It's been fine-tuned, Tom, within every parcel of land and the voting record for the people living there. This has all been finely tuned to make maximum impact in the elections way beyond, you know, what the state itself looks like. But it's been so heavily weighted on the, you know, the Democratic side, and it's been kind of baked into the system for so long that when it starts to
Democrats
are screaming bloody murder, but they benefited from it.
I started the conversation by saying we seem to do it once a decade with the census. Whether it's right or wrong, I don't know. But that's been the deal. And I also said it seems like the people in power get to do a pretty good job with this. Okay, and my question was, now do we want to go through it every other year when somebody sees they have an advantage? To me, it seems somewhat wasteful and kind of crazy. And by over 10 years, I also said a lot of things can happen in 10 years. A lot of the districts here in Illinois that were designed to be some of the neighborhoods on the south side have lost so many people that the areas further south that are probably more Republican now might actually be the majority. They might have screwed up when they're... I mean, a lot can happen. Now, what the Democrats in Illinois should do, if they're of the same ilk, is say, oh, wait a minute, we're not sure that we did a good enough job in 2021. Let's redo it again to make sure it lasts. I don't want that happening in all 50 states, John. I'm just saying, it's a waste of time.
Why is it a waste of time? Tom, I don't know if you saw Kevin's text just now, but, you know, this is...
I'm sure Kevin agrees with you that if you're Republican...
Well, it's a court order that's, you know, driven the redistricting in Texas. So,
okay.
You know, there's nothing illegal about what Texas is
I
doing.
I didn't say it was illegal. I said it's a ridiculous shenanigan deal every 10 years. I don't want to be in every 2 years because, you know, that group down there only meets every 2 years. The state legislature.
All the more reason why they should be doing this.
Okay, you know, that's fine. I mean, so they should spend an entire session on this. That's my point.
I think the consequences are important enough, Tom.
What's the consequences? You know? That you guys don't get another guy in Washington? and if Trump loses
his, it's another four or five guys.
Okay, so you don't want the House to change to get this guy thrown out. I understand that.
To get what guy thrown out?
Trump.
What do you mean get him thrown out?
If he gets annihilated in 2026, the first thing he thinks is going to happen is they're going to impeach him, which I hope doesn't happen. But so what are we doing here?
Tom, would you blame Trump for doing just that though?
What are you
talking
about?
He's been taught. It's not. Nobody's going
to. I'm coming to your side. People have picked on him so much, he gets to do whatever he wants.
Well, I'm saying, why?
Whatever
why
he wants.
Is anybody surprised by this kind of blowback? What's so shocking?
How far are you willing to go? Some people
far
say
enough to, so that the nobody way. Does it. Nobody does it again.
Nobody does it again. Nobody ever comes after a guy who's a felon again.
Oh, come on.
Oh, he's perfect. He's perfect. He's never paid off people. He's not part of the Epstein thing. He's never had a bad business deal. Come on.
Change the subject.
I mean, but how far I guess are we willing to go with this? And I'm saying states seeing, oh man, he's in trouble. We got to redistrict. To me, that's for a group that meets what do they meet? 3 months every 2 years. I mean, where are we at the end of the day?
They got to make hay while the sun shines, son.
It keep those dirty Democrats down, right?
Well, dirty Democrats, the ones that have inflated their congressional strength.
Okay. You know, it's interesting when you see the warts on both sides, you see a whole different view of this. If you're on one side or the other, you only see the warts on the other side, and I don't get that.
Well, what kind of warts would you say are Massachusetts' problems?
What do you mean, what kind of warts are Massachusetts?
Well, they have, you know, what, 9 congressional districts, and they're all Democratic?
Okay. What about North Dakota?
Do you think there are no Republicans in Massachusetts?
What about North Dakota? What about
only
South
got one
Dakota?
District for the whole state.
Right? All right. Well, see, there you go. Well, but I'm saying, John, I am not happy with this. Do you think
I'm disgusted by it?
But, well, you know what? Look at the district here in Chicago, where they had a big amount of on the Democratic side. See, I can talk about this because I'm not so locked into one side. The story, it can blow back. It can screw yourself up. For those that don't know, and I'm not encouraging you to do it, look at the congressional districts in Illinois. And you'll see one that used to be Chewy Garcia, and he quit. And who's in there? Oh, Chewy's in there now. Who's the guy before him? Who was there forever. The Hispanic guy.
Gutierrez.
Yeah, Gutierrez was there forever. Now it's Chewy Garcia, who was an alderman, is now the guy out of there. You look at that district, and you sit there and go, did I have too much to drink? how can this be a district? There's a huge Hispanic population on the south side in Pilsen. And there's another pretty good Hispanic population on the north side, like on Belmont and going west and so forth. So somewhere along the line, somebody must have said, okay, we need to give, we, the Democrats or who's ever in charge, need to give the Hispanics enough to where they essentially get their own person.
Well, why should that be?
Yeah, and I'm just telling the story. It's all
I'm just, yeah, I'm, and I think that's BS.
Okay, I'm just telling a story. I'm saying somehow or another, there was a district where the district now runs west, runs up. See, John, I know more about this than you, kind of being in the middle. It runs up between an uninhabited area between 290 and 294. Because it has to be contiguous. And it runs up to the north, turns around, and runs down the north side about maybe a mile wide, and it looks like a dumbbell, not a barbell, but a dumbbell, exactly like a dumbbell. You sit there and go, what the hell is this? Well, now the Hispanic population in Chicago is probably big enough that if you just did it randomly, they might actually be able to get two guys. So it's actually, over a period of 20 years, I think now has backfired on, which was my point earlier, that sometimes if you give it the 10-year thing, even if you're Democrat or Republican, even if you think you're stealing from the other side, you may screw it up so bad that 8 years later, it's working against you. That's why I'm not so happy with the guys in power being able to say, oops, we screwed up and make it even worse 2 or 5 years later. So that's my point. I mean, I'm on both sides of this. That's what I'm saying. I mean, now I think that the Hispanics, Hispanic voters in Chicago, are actually now kind of screwed by having allegedly the one district. Because I think probably now there's enough people here, they might actually be able to get two, if that's what they want.
Well, that's why Hispanic voters are moving to the Republicans, too, even in Illinois. Tommy, you and I remember when there were Republican senators and governors and congressmen. You know, Illinois was a fairly balanced state.
How many governors do you think in the last 30 years have been Republican and Democrat in Illinois? It's probably even.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so what are you saying? I mean, it has
happened. But what's happened also...
Rauner.
Grammatica's reign, really. I mean, this turned into a bad marriage of identity politics and Democratic overwhelming, hubris to effectively turn the state, on paper anyway, into a...
If only we'd had Republicans, everything would be perfect. There'd be no homeless, there'd be nothing.
If it were balanced, Tom, and it's been prevented from being balanced.
We've had Republican governors how many times? Rauner was there.
Yeah,
he did a horrible job.
Not in our congressional delegation.
But he did a horrible job.
What about the guy
who was there for four terms, the Republican guy? The guy who left because his heart was a problem. And he's still alive, I think. Or maybe he's not.
No, he's dead.
Who am I talking about?
Jim Thompson.
No, after him.
Edgar?
Yeah.
Well, he was a more appealing figure than Thompson.
Well, yeah, but I mean, he was Republican, right? He was there, what, four terms?
Yeah, but not in the congressional delegation, Tom, which is what a portion, but it doesn't affect the gubernatorial race. That's totally different. But it has great consequences for appropriations for the state. For the Electoral College. I mean, this is all what the Democrats figured out, 40 years ago. And they just completely, bashed the system to benefit themselves in just that one area. They didn't care about the governor because they clearly could control the governor. Push came to shove. Look what happened to Rauner. They didn't care who the governor was.
Well, I mean, Rauner was a horrible governor.
Yeah, but he would never. He was blocked at every step along the way.
But he could never make his appeal to the people. He had no.
He got elected.
Oh yeah, and then after that, why do we elect this guy?
Well, the Democrats made sure he would never be reelected.
This whole idea that every single problem in this country is from the Democrats, I just can't buy.
But Tom. Make them pay for what they have done.
Make
I'm not
them
saying they have to pay for everything,
okay.
But they've done enough, believe me.
Okay, in Washington, we've had, in the last 32 years, I'm not pretty counting the last year, we've had 16 and 16. You look at the, and we've had we've had hunks of Congress, totally Democrat for a while, totally Republican for a while, totally split for a while. You look at the amount of... budget deficit, you look at the amount of other stuff that's gone down and how we've degraded in education and other places, you can't even tell when one moron left and the other one moved in. So for me to believe anybody, either on your side or if I got some woke guy in here, that everything is a fault of the other side, I'm never going to believe it, Jan. I'm never going to believe it. Because if you look at both sides, they both suck and they're extremes. Neither one of them has done anything to change anything. And oh, by the way, this guy is now 8 months in his term, and there hasn't been one pill that's sinking the government, one prescription drug price that's come down since he's been there. And yet he's worried about putting the FBI out in the streets in Washington. It didn't go down under Biden. It didn't go down under Bush. It didn't go down on his first term.
Well,
all the stuff, he won't do anything.
Have you been to Washington recently?
No, it can't be. I mean, what's the story?
Well, I mean, it's to say it's got all the ills that any blue city has is an understatement. I mean,
if they were only a red city, everybody'd be perfect. Nobody pick anybody's pocket. Nobody doing anything.
But Tom, look at the record for blue cities.
The cities have all kinds of issues that are not blue or red. There were the Kerner report.
Most of them are caused by idiotic blue governance.
Okay, it's all.
Tom.
Anyway, S&P futures up 7. Nasdaq futures up If we only were Republicans, we'd be perfect. SP Fears up 7. That's just a horrendous way of thinking, John. These problems are there no matter who's in charge, and nobody's fixed them. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks Radio Show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate this summer, could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our Better Business Bureau A-rated team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. Call now for a free case review and a low price guaranteed quote to get you protected today. Call now. 800-388-4901. That's 800-388-4901. U.S. Tax Shield, 800-388-4901.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Louis, I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Matt Byrne on the board. SP Futures up 6, NASDAQ Futures up 12. We have the Dow's up 109 individual stocks. We got United Health up 2. We got V's up 1. Nothing crazy here. Goldman Sachs up 233. Nothing really down anywhere. NVIDIA's up down 80 cents, but that's not down much. Tesla's up $6. I don't know what's going on there, but they have been down and down a bunch. Now they've been back up. So you got to keep track of this stuff. Over in Europe, we've got the Ørsted. I don't even know what Ørsted is. Ørsted shares plunged 30% as global trade holds spotlight. DAX down 7, call that flat. FTSE up 29.3%. CAC round down 12.2. So very non-directional over in Europe. We've got the CPI coming up this week. That could be a big number or not, depending on what they come up with. Nikkei up 761. That's a big move. That's 1.8%. Hang Seng up 47.2. Shanghai up 12.3. Bonds. The 10-year down one base point with 4.27. We've got oil is down up 33 cents, but 64.21. It really is knocked back down here since the OPEC Plus said they come up with that other 400,000 barrels. I don't know. We made it. The top tick was 77 like 3 weeks ago, maybe 4 weeks ago now, so it's down a bunch from there. Boy, I remember sold that one at a good trade. Gold down 84 bucks, was down a little bit more earlier, 3406, still above 3400. Silver down 80 cents, that's 2%. 3770, we've been strong the last few weeks. Foreign exchange, we've got the euro pretty much unchanged at 116, British pound 134, so that's kind of sort of a 2 week high in the British pound, but not. It was over 135 there for a while. We got a big move up in crypto today. 1,200 bucks, 119, 885. It was over 120, so it's come back a little bit. Matt, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
Yeah, good morning, everyone. It's currently 7:37 a.m. on August 11th, 2025. Traffic, real quick. Inbound on the Kennedy from O'Hare to Janeburn Interchange is currently at 41 minutes. Outbound at 40. Inbound on the Eisenhower from Thorndale to JB, currently at 47 minutes, outbound at 41. Weather for Chicago for today, 75 degrees at O'Hare and 76 at Midway, high of around 87 today, slight chance of showers and thunderstorms in the afternoon. Tonight, 40% chance of thunderstorms and a low of 72. Down in Phoenix, 95 degrees right now, partly cloudy and sunny in the afternoon, temperatures set to reach 109 degrees, if you can believe that, yikes. Of course, baseball, MLB yesterday, White Sox at home against Guardians. Sox won, 6-4 was the final score. And of course, the Cubs away at the Cardinals. Cubs lost, though, 3-2. So I got Chief, over to you.
Do we have Audrey?
We do indeed,
no, we
yeah.
have Nancy.
We have Nancy. Yeah. Nancy, how are you?
Good, how are you?
What'd you do, tell Audrey to buzz off?
No, I think she was on last week, right?
Yep.
Because
yep.
I had the surgery, so I said, you know, I'll try. And I made it. I mean, I woke up this morning, and you know how that goes.
Well, when you wake up, that's a good start to any day.
That's correct. I mean, anytime you wake up in the morning. And the Bears actually like they tried to win. I mean, they at least participated in the game, which is a big plus.
Yeah, well, the Dolphins are pretty good. I mean, it's at least nobody got hurt like the other night, and they called a game. Ugh. I didn't see what happened to that guy, but... I don't think it was too good.
You know, I didn't either, but I did hear that it was not, you know, no one felt like playing. They did have an ambulance on the field, so it must have been pretty bad. They said he couldn't move his limbs, and then the next day they announced that he could, but that's pretty bad.
Yeah, yeah. Well, some guys, matter of fact, the dude that was just put in the Hall of Fame, Jimmy, which one was it? There was Shannon Sharp and Sterling Sharp. One of the dudes was in Green Bay, and he was a terrific receiver. He was kind of a blend guy between a tight end and a...
That was Sterling Sharp, yeah. And he left, I do believe he had a neck injury.
And I think what they discovered, Nance and everybody, is that when they did all the tests, they found out his spinal column was slightly narrower than normal. And said, you can't... it's too much danger for you to play ball, and he had to retire. See, the guy who was just put in the Hall of Fame was his brother. Must have been his brother.
Both were.
Both are. Because, I mean, he's a hell of a player. But they discovered that he had not everybody has the same size everything, spinal cords included. And they said you can't play anymore. And he was only, a five-year guy maybe? Six or so? Jimmy, he wasn't there very long.
No, he wasn't there long. I know he did win a Super Bowl, but I think because of the spinal thing, did cut his career short.
Yeah,
absolutely.
But anyway, so Nance, what's going on in your world? We haven't talked to you in a couple weeks. You sound good.
Yeah. What's going on in my world? It's kind of picked up. It's been busier than what I thought it would be. So I guess that's a good sign. It's just you wonder how long it's going to last, and you got to hope it's going to last for a while. So
refi or new?
New. I've asked people what is motivating you to do this, and they said we have been waiting and waiting and waiting, and we just don't want to wait anymore.
Well, cool.
So,
I,
So there's some hope. I mean, but I've also had customers say, I'm not giving up my, you know, 2.25% mortgage for anything, so you can forget that. I'm like, okay.
Well, yeah, man, that part I get. I mean,
yeah, I wouldn't either, but.
What, I saw some, you know, and I've been listening to some of these YouTube things on both sides, which I guess I'm not supposed to. I'm only supposed to listen to one side, but. And it was a guy talking about the crash had already started. You know, and of course you get, you know, in the business I'm in, wherever you can glean from somebody, and it seems like Nance and John, that if you, no matter how off the wall the person is, they seem to come to there's something in there, some nugget of information that seems legit that you can check on, that you find in every, no matter how much of a goofball the person is, there's something in there worth listening to.
Okay.
You know, it's like, the age old thing, no matter, there isn't a human, no matter how smart you think you are, there isn't a human being on earth that doesn't know something you don't know, right? And sort of the same thought process. And this guy was talking about the coming crash, and I'm figuring he must be talking about the market, so I better listen, just to see where he's coming from. Because some guys come up with something you never thought of. Well, this guy starts talking about housing, and he was saying that the housing disaster in Florida is now spread to Georgia, the Atlanta area, and it spread to Texas. And how they had some house on there from BlackRock that they paid, I don't know, $480 or some crap, and at some point it appraised at $6, and now it's on the market at $399, and there's no takers. And I don't know what part of Texas he was talking about, anything like. But have you heard anything like that? That there's in some areas now that are starting to be. I would have guessed Texas would be the last one to do that because they're growing down there.
But well, I know Florida is because of that, but that's a direct result of the hurricanes and the insurance companies not paying out or paying out, or somehow there's a difference between a windstorm, a hurricane, the flood. It's really getting picky. And so I guess that's the reasoning in Florida. And it's not like it was just a one-off. I mean, they've had, several storms that have caused a lot of, flooding.
Yeah.
And people are not getting paid what they need to get done. The other thing that's going on in Florida that's not being talked about is that people are, when they leave for the summer, let's say, and they come back to where they go, where it's cooler, they are closing their shutters and all that, the hurricane shutters, and they're putting everything down. And I guess scammers are renting their places out.
Well, so, they're not even there. I love it.
No, they're not there. And then what they're doing, is they're renting their places out, and people. Let's say for the month of February, you can rent it. January and February, you can rent the whole place for 2 months for $10,000. Okay, and people, but you got to pay up front. So these people are coming to the home, and they can't get in. So they call a locksmith. Locksmith's putting a new key in, and then they move in, and then they're squatters.
Oh God!
And so they're having a lot of trouble with this type of behavior. Because they have the lease showing that they've leased it, blah, blah, blah. And that's why the locksmiths are changing it. So I guess that's another issue now. So people are putting signs on their houses saying, we live here. This is not for rent. We'll never be for rent. Or I don't know. But I guess they're trying to deter it. And
yeah, Lance, didn't you and Audrey talk when you guys were on together? Boy, my memory's 6-8 months ago saying, some people were selling houses that weren't theirs here in this our area.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, John, you and Nancy were not talking about.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's a huge problem. I mean, there's a reason why they have those advertising campaigns for title lock, infomercials, tracking your real estate title, because somebody can easily, grab your house out from under you, forge a few documents, and poof.
It's but this is even beyond that. Now, this is something totally new where they're just renting it for you. And, they're trying to get in. And it just so happens, what really brought it to light is, I guess, some of the people, they return in January, right? Right after Christmas, they come back. And this guy was living there, and somebody's trying to get in his house. And, he told the guy, you must have gotten scammed. And then the police are called. And I guess it's getting to become a thing down
Well, you have. I mean, it's one thing to be fully furnished. It's quite another when you walk in and they got the mustard and the ketchup still in the fridge. You must figure somebody's living there. I mean, you can't be that dumb. Or are you?
Well, but in an Airbnb, you would have all that stuff in the refrigerator. So I guess people are getting totally confused. I guess it's getting very messy. And so that's another reason. So Florida has its issues right now. I believe that they will work themselves out if there aren't any more natural disasters. But they're the only ones I've heard of other than in California, which is always up for grabs.
What is you and Jan, what is your feeling? Actually, Jimmy might know more about this, but the people in the fires, like in Pacific Palisades and so forth, do they all get their checks, or are they waiting?
They're probably still waiting.
They're still waiting, yeah. It will be for a long time.
That's what I understood, too. They're waiting for a very long time. So you have, when you're saying the prices of the homes are going down, they're just going down because no one wants to buy into this type of a mess.
Well, the
problem.
Just a brief story. The guy that I saw him Saturday morning, right after me getting a haircut, Ronnie Cuchero. We stood next to each other basically in the same spot for 15 years in the OEX, but terrific guy. Talk about this, Nance and Jan. He came to my mother's wake on a Tuesday, and after the funeral the next day, I went to his dad's wake the next night up in the North Shore. Turns out his dad was a destroyer commander or something, South Pacific, a million medals up there. Ronnie, he never told me your dad was in the... He goes, well, he never even told me. Like, okay, then. Anyway, they had a place down in a condo in, not politically correct, down in the Redneck Riviera, right? And they had that big hurricane there. When was that, John or Jimmy? It was, I'm going to say, God, 15, 18 years ago. I was still trading. I must have been in the 90s. And everybody was evacuated. They go down, and it was, you know, there's the beach, you know, some crap, and then there's the road, and there's the parking lot, and then there's your place, right? Well, they said they got out there, the place is gone. It's just like a six-story place. All that's left is the slab. So you wonder, what happened to my TV? What happened to my dresser? Well, like, nobody was even there. So the insurance company, just like you're talking about, Nance, for years they said, oh, no, it was a wall of water, it wasn't the wind, or whatever they don't pay on, that was the one. But nobody was there to even see what it was. And so he said, it must have been like, I'm going to say a decade later, they got like 45 cents on the buck or something, they finally settled. Is it that bad, you guys? I mean, is it?
Oh, I believe it might be worse, yeah.
It could be, from what I'm hearing. I agree with John. I mean, people are saying that there's a difference between, like you're saying, there's certain things they don't pay for, and they'll say, well, it flooded, and that's what caused, you know, like the roof to collapse, or, you know, it's some crazy thing that you just sit there and say, if I have insurance, you should be insuring the whole thing. It's just like in Illinois. Not that we aren't the flattest place in the world, but they don't put earthquake insurance on your houses. That's a separate item, and no one takes it. But could you imagine what would happen if we had an earthquake here?
Well, you know, the single biggest biggest earthquake ever in the U.S. occurred in Illinois.
Excuse me?
The single biggest earthquake that ever happened in the U.S. occurred in Illinois.
Did it really?
Yeah. The New Madrid Fault. Well, it's Illinois and Missouri, too, right, Jan?
And Kentucky, yeah.
And Kentucky?
1811, 1812. Huh?
It was so insidious. And not only that, actually, you say, where the hell did I get this story? When we used to fly to New York for the CBOE, I used to take Southwest. And Southwest used to have their magazine. Was it the Chicago magazine, Jan? There was a magazine called Chicago Magazine, right?
It's still around, yeah.
But it used to be a real serious where that's what Midway used as their magazine for people to read. They must have had a 30-page thing on earthquakes. And I tell you what, to this day, I would love to have it because it was one of the most best. And they were talking about this New Madrid quake. And evidently, if you have a huge quake in, like, California, it can be really bad. But because it's mountainous terrain and all this stuff, it doesn't go very far. But if you have one like here, it just keeps going. So this one in New Madrid stopped bells and it was like a, what was it, John? Like a 7.8 here or an 8. It was like a 6 in Boston, wasn't it, or something?
Yeah.
It just kept going. and it actually turned, the Mississippi went the wrong way for a while or something.
Yeah, it flowed backwards.
Flowed back. I mean, it was unbelievable. And then they went through all the different buildings in Chicago and different building structures that would go down if something like that happened. And guess which one would go down? One I'm living in. Nancy, have you ever seen those guys when they're building a building now and they got the two different rows of brick, or they got the concrete block and then they got the brick outside of it?
Yes.
Those little things, they look like pieces of aluminum foil, where they go in on one brick and then they go up and then go in on the next line of mortar on the brick next to it. Those are earthquake things.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. I never knew that. I'm reading this article. And, you know, there's a big fault. Didn't they just have a little earthquake in New York? There's a big fault right down the East River in New York. This thing was the most fascinating article. And then, of course, I just, instead of stealing the magazine, I just put it back in. But I wish I could find that article. But it was really something. But no, the biggest one was here. So, you know, we're not safe. So why nobody grabs it, I don't know. But
why don't they just include it then?
I don't know. Well, they don't want to pay. What if the whole place went down? Said every house like mine would go straight down because it's only designed for vertical stress and not for horizontal stress.
But we would have the same situation that Florida. If this occurred, we would have the same situation that Florida had, which is very sad.
Well, actually, the buildings like the Sears Tower and the First National Bank and how's the other one, Hancock, those things are all the way down into their bedrock. I said they would be okay. You'd get shaken pretty damn good. I mean, you might get your teeth might get shaken out, but they'd be up. But all these other buildings, like where you guys were, Jimmy, 425, they're all built on caissons. Not so much. According to this guy. Yeah, not so much. They wouldn't do near as well. Well, back to whoever did this, like a structural journey, he spent his whole life charting earthquakes. Because evidently in New Madrid, it didn't go. If you look, the San Andreas was way more than anybody wants to talk about. San Andreas, it's two plates that slide, right? John and Jimmy and Nancy?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, the New Madrid, I think, just dropped. It just went down like 8 feet or something instead of sliding. So it just was a big, whole different feeling all around it. And it just keeps going.
There are stories that, you know, when trappers were going through the Mississippi and the surrounding waters in the next year after the earthquake, they couldn't get their bearings because they saw all of these, you know, pine trees with just like 2 or 3 feet sticking up above the water level. And these had formerly been, you know, 100-foot tall pine trees. Everything just dropped.
Yeah, I mean, it's a totally different. That, what was the little one? I actually was driving back from Arizona. What was the one we had? It was like 10 years ago. No, it was more than that. 15 years ago. I was actually right near the epicenter of that. I was in a Best Western. All of a sudden, the things start shaking, and I go, well, it's either a tornado or an earthquake. What am I doing here? And it shook for a while. It shook some stuff off the desk. Nothing got damaged, but it was felt up here. Remember that one?
Well, it woke me up.
Yeah.
That was the anniversary of the San Francisco quake.
So,
April 18th.
So, Nance, your recommendation is to, for Stocks and Jacks listeners, is to buy the hurricane or the earthquake insurance.
Let's put it this way. If you owned your home outright, I would buy the earthquake insurance because there's no one that's going to fight for you.
Well, if the whole state goes down, who the hell's going to pay it?
If you have the earthquake insurance, the insurance company will pay it.
You're assuming that the insurance company is going to be able to pay for like 100,000 buildings in Chicago.
If you have the insurance, if you don't, no. But if I didn't have a mortgage on my home and I owned it outright, I mean, it's the single most probably important, important or biggest investment that you have.
Oh, yeah.
In one investment, just saying. And then all you have to do is pay, what, $100 a year to have the earthquake insurance? I mean, I would take it because if you have a mortgage, someone else is going to help fight the insurance company, right?
Well, you're assuming that the insurance company has that deep of a checkbook. That was my question.
Yeah, I do think that the insurance companies do have that deep of a checkbook because they have reinsurers on them.
Yeah.
All right.
So I do believe that they do have that, yes. But the problem is if you don't have anyone fighting for you, no, they don't have to pay. I mean, if they tell you they're not paying, who are you going to go to? Right? Well, so I have seen people who did not have flood insurance when it was a natural disaster, and I know the village got involved, and then they wound up paying out in the section where it happened with the promise that they would call architects and refigure it and reconstructure it. So at least they came to something. But in Florida, I think the devastation is just so large. I don't know if it's that people aren't insured. I mean, look at the building that collapsed. How long ago was that? You know, where the people got killed and everything in the garage was wrecked. I mean, that was just from... Was that from flooding?
No, it was... They were... Your building's essentially on sand.
Mm-hmm.
So wherever they did, they didn't put enough reinforcement, and that side of the swimming pool essentially was too heavy for it, right, John? And it separated away from the
stair side.
I think the cars are heavier now you've got in the electric cars are heavier than regular cars. I mean, there's so many factors that go into this, right?
Well, the thing was not built to code, and that's why when they inspected it afterward, they said, okay, let's figure out these architects and all the years that, I mean, how many, there was a building boom, I'm going to say the thing was what, John? 30, 40 years old? And they basically said, okay, who the hell was building all these buildings 30, 40 years ago, of which there's a zillion of them? And they went and reinspected all of them. And didn't like every single one need something. The, not only the codes have changed, they weren't exactly built to the codes to start with. Wasn't that the deal, John?
Right. And the substructure in Florida is pretty porous, you know, compared to, it's not, you know, really designed for tall building construction.
Where is this at now? Is that, if any of it been corrected? Has anybody paid out?
Well, that's part of the issue. The answer is because Florida, I think you have to be licensed in the state to do any business there, and virtually any company that was capable of doing that kind of stuff, like fixing a high rise, was already totally engaged with this from a few years ago, right, Jan? So, and all of a sudden the hurricane hit, and they're like, where's all the contractors? Well, they're already busy. Isn't that part of the deal?
Yeah, it's overload.
Yeah, but there's like, how long did, Kenny or Hal, Dan
Janitas was talking about trying to get his roof repaired.
Well, what about the guy, who was the one who was told us that the dude had the 50-foot sailboat in his pool for like a year and a half?
Yeah.
And the sailboat, the front of the sailboat was in the guy's living room, right? And it was still sitting. It was over a year before they moved it, Nance.
Oh, my God.
And he said they kept coming out there with boats and machines, and the guy go, we're not big enough, and leave. 6 months later, they'd send out a bigger one, we're not big enough, and leave. I mean, we finally got some big monster crane out there and lifted the thing on some semi, I guess.
Wow. See, it's sad, isn't it, guys? I mean, that if this goes on.
Well, hey, I have a question. While we got like a couple of minutes, I was going through. I found this site. I thought I sent it to you, Nance, but you were busy being fixed up. It's something 2013. Anyway, it's a site where guys, I don't know if it's government or who it is, but they have a history of the CPI, and they go back. Okay. And if you want to say, what's this line of the CPI? From going back to 2000 or something, they'll give you the number. And so I was going back and checking, like the one that we always talk about, all of us. We agree on something, John, that the line on the owner's equivalent rent is all screwed up.
Oh, yeah.
So actually, and by the way, John, I'd say you and I and Nance have had this discussion how many times. What does that line even mean, and how far back does it go? Anyway, these guys, I went back, okay, what was $100 on that line in 2000 worth today? They got it at $213. So owner's equivalent rent is only up, 110%, which I think when houses are up, what, almost three times, right? Or 2.7. And Nance, I was going to ask you, I went to the whatever site I went to. Today, the average mortgage homeowner's insurance for the year is up to $2,750. I don't know if that concurs with your thoughts. I can only go back to 2007, and they said 2007 it was $700. So I'll be nice and say in 2000 it was $500. So that's up pushing six times in 25 years. Does that sound right to you?
No, I don't believe the number is that high. The average I've seen is about, you know, and this can change. Like, I'd say the average homeowner's insurance right now is around $1,200 a year.
Really?
Yeah, it's not, it's...
Because this was homeowner's insurance in Illinois, and the average house, they had it at $2,700.
No, no, not at all. But I will tell you this, the insurance on... You can get it cheaper because you just insure for less. That's all.
Well, okay.
And that's what people do. So maybe that's why I'm seeing those numbers less. But you have to at least insure for the amount of the mortgage. You don't have to do replacement value. You have to do...
I think this is a... This one number was all-in replacement value.
Yeah.
It could be. Then it really probably could be because I know my home... I looked at it and was like so surprised. My home, the replacement value is more than what I could sell it for.
Well, that's what's so...
And it's so strange because if, let's say, the tornado comes through and it wiping down to the ground or came back to the foundation, you still don't have to pay for the lot. You don't have to pay for the foundation because that doesn't get destroyed.
When they start talking about, and we're running over time here, when they start talking about the... putting in, and actually, well, the Republicans had a deal and the Democrats are fighting with them about getting, as a matter of fact, somebody wrote an article, who's a Republican guy, John, about, you know, Trump needs to build 2 million low-cost houses. I'm sitting there, you know, Audrey just did all this rehab, and I've been doing some rehab, and I don't know, where. How do you build a low-cost house now? What's it going to look like? An outhouse? I don't think anybody's... Do we know anybody?
You might buy it at Menards, maybe.
No, I was just at Menards. They're pretty expensive.
John, that idea, when that ship has sailed now. We have seen it sail with Audrey doing her rehab, and that does not work.
I picked up... we're redoing part of the porch, so I'm getting... I ended up with, like... At my age, I'm hauling 60 boards, right? 2x4s and nothing huge. And the 1x4s you use for the uprights and stuff, we had maybe 75 boards I got in the back of my truck. $800 for 1x4s and stuff. $800. That's a number. And they go, oh, geez, send this in, you'll get 11% back.
Yeah, right.
You know, I've done that twice. I've never once gotten a check.
I got one check on like 10 attempts. I actually got a check.
Really? How long did it take?
2 months.
So you're saying I should give it another try?
Well, I don't know. I just say, why don't they take the 11% off the cash register and be done with it?
Well, I said, what if I get a credit card? Do you just take the 11% off? No, we'll give you 5% off with a credit card. Then you can still send it in. I'm going, okay.
That's it. I wanted to ask you before we adjourn, just because Tom and I were talking about it earlier. What do you see in your client base of first-time home buyers, people who don't own anything yet and are coming to you to get a mortgage for the first time? Are those numbers, pretty stable? What's the age group of those people, and what do you tell them that's different from what you tell some other borrower?
I can honestly say the people I've dealt with recently have been, very surprising to me. But one was a younger group, maybe like 30s, late 20s, maybe 30. But I was shocked they were paying $4,500 a month in rent. I think that's a lot of money for rent.
Where were they? At Taj Mahal?
No, they're in Chicago on the north side.
Wow.
In Lakeview. So, I mean, I was absolutely shocked at that. And then I would say the next group that I've been really doing where they've been successful and they've come to close on the mortgages, they've been close to 40, buying their home for the first time, and the average price they're paying is $380.
That's kind of that's an entry level house up by you guys now, right?
I didn't think so until I started working with them. I mean, they wanted to buy it for $300 or $325, and it's very difficult finding anything at that price. And they can afford more, but they have it in their head that they only want to be like at $1,500, $1,600, $1,700 for their payment all in. That's the taxes, insurance, and everything. And that number, we just couldn't meet it. Or they couldn't find anything. So 380 has been about the magic number. And they're just putting less down, taking the private mortgage insurance, and they're getting in, but their payments are, you know, close to 25 to 3,300, somewhere in there. A lot of it depends on the taxes. What are, you know, that's always the wild card.
Oh, and then they're probably,
one home
they're probably
can have
for
a tax bill for $12,000 a year, and the one next door has got one for $5,000. Someone explain to me why that is. I don't know, but it's Chicago. We all know why it works that way.
Yeah, it's pretty messed up.
Yeah. Well, Nancy, unfortunately, John, the people are trying. I mean, at least they're starting to get in and get their feet in the water. So it's very difficult for people right now. I mean, I couldn't imagine being 40 and not owning my home for the first time.
Well, Lance, thank you. You sound great, John. Thank you very
much.
Even though we were jousting, I'm glad I straightened you out a little bit. You know.
So, live to fight another day.
We'll live to fight another day. Anyway, SP Futures up 4, NASDAQ Futures up 4. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
See you guys.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
My advice to you, start drinking heavily.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. JetBlue Airways. It's not the only way to fly, but it should be. Visit JetBlue.com. Empower HR, your human resources partner. That's EmpowerHR.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. BDL Compliance Consulting. Visit BDLCC.com. DAX Research. Listen to David Andelman on Mondays and Thursdays and go to DACSResearch.net.